Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You should leave now. I'm tired of people listening to shows talking like this.
That's not the Democrat.
Your email doesn't come across quite right. Our top fans are the judgmental Luigi.
We need a higher educated demographic.
All right. Well, if you're still there, you're listening to Live from the Path. Hey, and if you're watching online, check this out. It's a banner day in the program because when we play the opening, it's a YouTube clip. Okay, our opening's posted online, and generally, you see, we monetize the ads because we need to make some big money. Otherwise, the radio station folks are going to catch on and say, "Hey, we're going to throw you off the radio station."
Yeah.
And so, anyway, we agree to the advertisement thing. And what has been on almost every one of our videos is some really cheesy, crappy, basically clickbait software that you get on and then it infects your computer. Like, that's who's been advertising on our stuff.
Awesome.
We don't have any control over that. It's just whoever finds your stuff valuable. And that's kind of where we're at in the world. So we fired up the show today, and our advertiser on the clip was Explore the Bible Book-by-Book Studies for Groups of All Ages, preview 1 month free.
Yeah.
Hey,
sweet.
That
wow.
is relevant content, boys.
That's big money.
Now, here's the deal. I didn't vet that out, so, you know, I can't vouch for this operation. But I'm just saying, like, that's good news.
Maybe they're trying to get the Christians with the virus.
That could be true. That's good. Hey, man, Christians are suckers. Christians are suckers. They're too trustworthy on the online. They're like, oh, yeah, someone's giving away a free copy of Philemon.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Philemon. You could write Philemon on your arm, all right? It'll fit on your arm. There's no reason to download it from the net. Philemon.com.
I feel like I got in a big argument with maybe it was my wife about calling it Philemon. I can't remember exactly how that happened.
Is that, Buva, what do you call it?
I used to call it Philemon. And then
like filet powder?
No. Yeah, exactly. What you put in the gumbo? Filet man.
It's like feelings in the Gila Monster.
Feelings, man. It sounds like it's just awful. But I've been corrected to say that it's Philemon.
Okay.
That's good.
Everyone in the room agrees that that is the correct pronunciation of Philemon.
All right, we're solving life's problems. Here's what's going on the show tonight. First of all, we're continuing our discussion. Last week we started Seven Lies Christians Tell. And I should post the graphic because there's like the graphic on ChristianityToday.com where this article is at is like a guy with like a normal looking fella. It was like as if the Facebook F was a man, but then there's like a Satan's tongue coming out, like a lizard's tongue.
Oh,
I don't know who creates this type of thing.
You don't work here.
But anyway, it's available on ChristianityToday.com. Anyway, it's the seven lies Christians tell, and we made it through a few of them.
I have a couple to add.
All right, so here I'll read the ones that we got through. We got through, we lie when we claim we are more confident than we really are. We lie when we claim that unexplainable things are in fact explainable. We lie when we don't acknowledge our doubts within the drama of faith. We lie when we pretend like the Bible doesn't say some really nasty things when in fact it does. So those were the four that we got through. So we're going to hit the remaining three tonight.
Dad's on Facebook, Bill.
Plus,
I'm posting that we're on the radio.
Hands up.
And that's where our article was.
Yeah, fair enough. So Mike seems like he's got a couple more. Mike also has a Pope style preview on the Pope style, Mike.
Actually, hold on. That lie thing was only by de facto because I'm a Christian and I may have told a couple. And I'm not sure whether I have to add them. I don't know if they're broad sweeping problems amongst all Christianity. But
Or if you just told some lies today.
Or maybe I just told a lie or two.
Okay.
Seven lies Christian Mike told today.
Of my Pope style advice. I was reading the Bible with the ladies tonight, and we were having some conversations a little bit about what heaven might be like, and these are always fantastic to me. And anyway, they're the innocent way that they appear to look at things just blows me away sometimes. And so I think I have some Pope style advice just based on my character and based on the character of Christ, what heaven might be like. So.
Okay. All right. Cool. Buva, you have some potential Pope style. What you got?
I do have some potential Pope style. Stop being such a schmuck and be more of a man of your word.
Be a man of your word. Don't be a schmuck. All right. We'll hear that parsed out.
So be a Mike, not a Booba. That t-shirt's going to sell.
I think you switched those.
Whoops.
7 lies Mike told today. 8.
I once was Boovered, but now I found. I was blind, but now I see.
Yeah.
Also, we got some advice on Dear Alive from the Path, and I think that basically rounds out the program.
Yeah.
All right. So here we go. Let's get into the remaining 3 lies that Christians tell. Number 5 on the list. We lie when we claim we understand other beliefs, faiths, and worldviews. We need to stop saying things like, I understand Islam, or I know what a Muslim thinks, believes. I don't ever talk in slashes.
Hey, I took a class. I get it.
Dan took a class. Do you want someone to... I get all mine off of random internet clips.
Actually, it was an ad on Facebook that said, I understand Muslims for Dan. And I thought, yeah, that's me. I'm Dan.
I can be this man. Do you want someone saying that they understand your faith experience because they once lived in a Greek Orthodox neighborhood? Do you think a Muslim would accurately understand your beliefs because they read a book about Christianity, particularly one written by Muslim scholars? Belief systems are extremely diverse. Heck, in Christianity, there are hundreds of Protestant denominations alone, before we even talk about Orthodox, Coptic, Armenian, Syrian, Palestinian, just to scratch the surface. Other religions are just as diverse. Furthermore, faith experience can be as specific as a neighborhood, family, or individual. What do you think, boys?
Totally on this one.
Yep.
Yeah, completely agree.
Absolutely. I have to continually challenge myself to take a step back, because I did take a class on Islam, doctrine of, no, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, it was on their beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think I have it all figured out. And then I think, yeah, I really don't. You know, and it was taught from a guy who'd spent like decades over there, you know, and we had all these books we read and everything, and read the Quran and all that stuff. And it was like, I know these guys, you know, so I see stuff. Like, yeah, that's how it's written, you know, and I don't have a clue. I don't
right.
have a clue. I mean, I can sit down and have conversations with Christians, like he says, and we can't even agree on like, you know, the color of Jesus' hair. I mean, yeah. Well, that's not a big deal, but you know what I'm saying.
He was a brunette.
No, it was red.
Arab brown.
I got a painting.
Move it.
Arab brown. I'm just saying, we don't get it nearly as much as we think we do.
Yeah.
I don't know why we even claim that. You know what I'm saying? Like, actually, when push comes to shove, like, it is important to understand where people come from just so you can know who they are. But, like, I don't know that I need to know a whole lot about it, right? Like, as long as I ain't pointing fingers, I guess, I mean... how much do I really need to know? Like, if my goal was to talk to him about Jesus, that's really all the facts I need, right?
Yeah, like, if I'm lost, and someone says, here's the directions to my house, and then here's the directions to 10 other houses, I think to myself, I'm not really all that concerned about it. Yeah. I just want to go back to my house.
Yeah.
And so, like, there is a lot. Actually, the internet is a feeding ground of this, yeah. of people posturing to know more than they know. To make connections where they weren't. And here's the deal. As much as I hate seeing the Bible taken out of context and ripped and torn around to make people say what they want, I have to assume that same brand of dude is doing the same thing to the Quran.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's reading a thing here that I'm not saying that it's a broad notion. I'm a Christian. All right. I've made my choice. All right. So I'm not vouching for the truth of the Quran. But what I'm saying is that, like, you look like a fool if you engage in conversations about those things in a totally disingenuous way that you'd be upset about when people are doing it with the Bible.
Yeah.
All right? So like, let's just at least be honest about what we know and what we don't know and not look so foolish as to claim that I know what you believe. And actually, that was that big – one of the big things I took away from that book about Nabil Qureshi was Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus. Was all the cultural things, all the familial things that are tied into their Islamic faith, and so, like, it isn't as just as, oh, I found something that I think is more true, I'll just go that way. Like, I mean, you're being disowned by your family, your friends. I mean, your whole social infrastructure is tied up in this belief system, more integrated, frankly, than most Christianity is.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a better sense of when someone is coming from that background, it isn't just a truth claim versus truth claim. Like, it's a loaded proposition. There's much more that it means to kind of step out of that community, which frankly I think was where a lot of even our modern Christianity gets community wrong, because you could leave Christianity and become something else and be like, well, you know, that's not a big deal. But like, when you're a Muslim, you become a Christian, like, you're done. You're outside of that community.
Yeah.
And so And so it actually, I really love that book. I really love that book, not because of what it taught me about Christ, although it was very cool seeing a man come to Jesus through that. It was to see a man see Jesus through the eyes of risking everything. And recognizing that there's a longing in my heart that says, I want that to be me. I can't create his circumstance, but in the things that I am tied up in, am I willing to do the same thing? And so it's a cool apologetic work too, but it's being able to see that through the eyes of someone that is struggling who understands what the Bible says about the consequences of following Christ and pursues it anyway, where we usually say, yeah, I'll take Christ. And then we have to kind of be beaten in the head with the consequences to like understand, no, really, you're supposed to give up everything. No, really.
You mean that?
You're supposed to give up everything. and like, we're like, oh yeah, I did. No, you didn't. And so, it's a very cool reference for that. And it reinforces the fact that like, even people that I think are straight wacko crazy, there's more to it than that. Their lives are tied up in that. Just don't act like you understand. Don't posture beyond that.
I think of like the Noah movie that came out a year or so ago, and they put all this research into it, and they did all this, put all kinds of money into trying to figure out the story. And when they put it together, most Christians were like, that is the most obscene thing I've ever. I didn't even go see it because of the stuff I heard about it. Well, and it comes out that they actually did study. They just studied the wrong books
and
the wrong people.
Yeah.
I mean, those stories were part of somebody's writing at some point about Noah and the Ark. And I mean, I'd never heard of that stuff before. And I'm like, they don't know my faith, you know, but they made a whole movie of it, hoping that I would come.
And then marketed it to you as if you should soak it up.
And I'm like, you're not speaking my language. You're talking about something completely different. And I think that's what we do the opposite. The
same thing. And it's offensive, right? To say, I presume because I catered this product to you as a broad scope Christian, you will soak this up. And I think he's right. Like, even neighborhood by neighborhood, you know, understanding like how people look at things and what they mean to certain circumstances, like you just don't have that perspective. And you know how you get it? You ask. Like, you engage with people in conversation. How are they engaging Scripture? Because to be honest with you, like, you come from a specific set of circumstances and backgrounds. There's no guarantee that you're catching it in the way that that it was said or intended or should mean. As a matter of fact, like, that's like why a lot of time proper exegesis always includes like, how would the guy that was there at the time heard this versus like, how would you have heard it? And if you're not kind of passing through some of those filters, it's how we get a lot of things wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's say you ask a simple question, how does one become a Christian?
Yeah.
And you ask a Baptist and a Methodist and a Presbyterian and a Catholic and I don't know, whatever denomination, you're going to get like 12 different answers.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a clue and you really want to know, that's pretty confusing.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's like, I mean, we don't even know ourselves.
Yeah. Let alone other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll move on to, you know, trying to understand the Quran fully to be able to speak to it in someone else once I've got the Bible nailed down, which means I ain't getting around to it.
It's not
going to happen. All right. Let's see. Here we go. Number six. We lie when we claim that all of our beliefs are a 10. This one is probably, that's a 10 in quotes. This one is probably going to frustrate some people, Buva, but we are disingenuous when we claim all of our dogmas with equal veracity. To put it another way, on a scale of 1 to 10, not all Christian beliefs are a 10. Do I believe in the historicity of a floating zoo? Yes, I do. Do I hold to the specific details of that historic event with the same lay-my-life-on-the-line conviction as I do the historical death on a cross and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth? No, I do not. The details of the zoo are not a 10 for me. Jesus is a 10.
I disagree with him on this one.
Dan's out on this one.
How can Jesus be a 10? Like if you got that information from the same place, you can't just pick and choose what are tens and what are not.
Yeah. Either it's inspired or it's not. It's real or it's not.
Buva?
From that perspective, I agree with you guys that it's in the Bible that we should agree with it. But I'm taking that from a different perspective, though, from the question standpoint. I think if someone asked me more specifically, like, you know, I call into play the whole dinosaur thing, and we've had the answer of, you know, you find it in Job, and there's places in the Old Testament where you hear about these beasts and stuff like that. But if someone said to me, you know, do you believe the dinosaurs were in the Bible and blah, 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 you know, I don't know specifically where, and I wouldn't say that my belief in being able to say yes is a 10, whereas I get from the same book where that is, that I believe wholeheartedly that Jesus is the Son of God, that he is the Christ, and that he died for our sins. So that is a 10 for me.
Yeah, but a cubit's a cubit. He says it's a cubit.
The stuff you do read, you would give a 10.
Yeah, so
yes.
So maybe this helps. It's like you want to call a Leviathan, right?
Yeah, Leviathan and
So Behemoth. a guy who I'm willing to take as much as the Bible states explicitly, and that is a 10 for me. The Leviathan as a dinosaur, that's an interpretation.
Right.
That's an interpretation. You're not going to pin me down on the age of the earth. You're just not.
Right.
It doesn't say.
Right. Yeah. So I will speak firmly of where I believe the Bible has spoken. I think a lot of the times they're playing in speculation that is not unfounded. Like, I get it. I get where it's come from. But things that the Bible claims specifically are a 10. Things that people believe are inferred by and can help explain certain things. I'm interested, but that's not a 10.
Right.
If that's the distinction that guy's making, I'm there with that.
I think some of that comes back to kind of what you're saying, though, is like the proper exegesis, like reading it, how the guy would have read it. And a lot of that has to do with like some of the interpretations of numbers throughout the New Testament, especially the tail end, and then some of the prophetic books of the Old Testament. Like the way that the numbers are interpreted to mean, you know, in Jewish culture is more of a circular reference to whatever, something being whole or complete or something. It's a little bit, so most of it's a little bit above my head, right? But like, I would have gone tooth and nail on some of those numbers unless you would have told me different, right? Unless someone would have walked me through it being different.
Oh, to understand, like, things symbolic versus literal. Yeah, right.
Yes. And so, like, some of those things I think we can probably get a hair off on, you know, especially in the book of Revelation. You know, I mean, there's some tens through the right lens, you know, but, like, through the wrong lens, it's not a 10.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the difference, right? If to say, do you take everything the Bible says as literal truth? I would say that's a flat no, because the Bible doesn't speak in that way all the time. Like, it's just foolish to make it sound like that. Like the beasts with the heads and a lot of the numbers that are being used, like the natural reading reflects symbolism. That is literally what they intended to do. When we say literal, a lot of people mean, like, if I say a 10, it's always a 10. It means a straight count
of
10.
Right, it's literally figurative.
Exactly. And so, you know, like, if you're saying, do I read the Bible in a way in which there's no room for symbolism and story, then the answer is a flat no, because that's not what the Bible even presents itself as. And so, I think actually there's a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to biblical inerrancy. If you're not, people take symbols as if it's an error, as if it's unintended. People like it has to mean a straight count, and that's the only way God works. The very breadth of literature types that are in the Bible, I think, implies that that's not exactly how God works. He is not locked into that type of description. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes people get on this, is it a 10, as to say, I have to die for this, and it has to be this, literal, again, isn't the right word, but like, it has to be that. God doesn't act in any way that could be confusing. It's confusing to us because we don't talk that way. So
yeah, I would not call like my particular systematic theology conclusions of certain doctrines to be a 10. That's my understanding of it. But I would call the scriptural, like you say, the things that are just plain scriptural, that everything in it's 10.
I think you use the right language there. Like, my conclusions are not 10s.
Yeah. Right? I'm an idiot.
The facts that I've been given are 10s. The conclusions that I've, or how I've grouped them together, or how I've put them together, are not worth dying for.
That the Pharisees had Jesus, the Son of God, right in front of them and didn't see him. And they had the scripture.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, so we can interpret it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I guess we're 9 with that guy.
I think we're pretty close. I mean, even he said, do I believe in the historicity of a floating zoo? Yes, I do. He's not a flood denier. Like,
he's just saying it's not the size that God took the time out to tell him?
He didn't even say about the size. He said,
he just believes in the cross more.
Do I hold to the specific details of that historic event with the same lay my life on the line conviction? If the details were biblical, my answer is yes.
Yes.
If not, no.
If they equal rock creatures, then no.
That movie was just bad. Like, it was just not a good movie.
I haven't seen it. I should have seen it, but I haven't.
No, seriously. Like, I wasn't even upset theologically because it wasn't close enough for me to care. It was just not a good movie.
It was just not good.
Finally, and most importantly, heavy comma, we lie, insidious and barbaric lying, when we pretend like we really, really, really love the other person when in fact we don't. We do not love people when we dismiss their story, including their hopes, values, beliefs, and convictions. We do not love people when we do not emphatically listen to them as opposed to spending that time formulating a counterargument. We do not love others when we reduce them to labels, caricatures, or opponents.
This is all explaining my relationship with Buddha. If we love, then we will find them shockingly beautiful and fascinating creations.
Agreed.
I feel more connected to you already.
Sweet.
We will find their stories riveting. We will radiate affection. Humans know deep down when they are or are not truly loved.
Hey, man, some people don't tell riveting stories. Yeah. Here's the thing. You want to have a lie. Have me pretend that you're telling a riveting story when you're not.
Yeah, Mike, if you were always interested in the stories that I'm telling, I would know that you were just flat out lying to me.
I feel like it's more disingenuous to allow someone to placate them. And like, I understand there's social situations and there's people that aren't good at it, like me. You know what I'm saying? That can't seem to understand the line between being honest and just being nice. But like, to a certain extent, like, I feel like I owe you enough not to lie to you about what's going on here.
So I assume he's making the broader case for like riveting life stories, not necessarily
who they are, their perspectives.
Like, yeah, certain people we know who tell long stories that don't go anywhere.
Well, once again, when someone shows up with perspectives that are completely asinine and dumb, like why would I leave them to sit there and wallow in their own filth? Now you can present your case with love and without arrogance or, you know, however, whatever way you've decided to deliver it to make the other person feel small. That's not the point. But like, I mean, to leave someone in their ignorance, purely just for whatever the sake of being nice to them, that just seems wrong.
So I think you may be taking it too specific.
I'm dead on in what I'm saying.
You don't love people.
That was riveting, Mike.
That's true.
So I think basically what he's saying is like if you're treating them like a number, basically, are you you're just trying to get them into a church pew? You're trying to fact check them into the kingdom.
He didn't say that.
I know, but
that's what you're saying.
As opposed to spending that time formulating a counter argument, we don't have when we reduce them to labels, caricatures, or opponents.
Yeah, I'm totally guilty. Totally. I'm a liar. It's really the last couple of years I've been really rethinking how I approach people because I've given them labels and not let them be people.
Yeah.
You know, whole groups of people. Whole groups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute, this is a person that has a story.
I've studied to go and talk to somebody. Like, I not like Bible study.
To get their arguments and.
Yeah, no, I didn't Bible study, which would have been the appropriate reaction to, hey, man, that guy's got a question and I would like to answer it biblically. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to dive into the Lord's Word. I say, hey, man, that guy's got a question, and I'm going to go ahead and go into an encyclopedia real quick, and I'm going to figure this stuff out. And then I'm going to go up to him and be like, well, global warming. He's going to love Jesus.
When we went to – I was talking to someone about this today. We went to that atheist conference a couple years ago, and there were some people on the outside coming in arguing because they have the atheist label. They could debate and argue with them. They could care less about their story, right? We were in a motel room – overseeing the entire conference. They assumed we were one of them. We were just praying for them, right? We didn't engage in fighting, and we were down eating breakfast with them. We were hearing their story and praying for them more appropriately because we got a little more into their life. I mean, we didn't have too many conversations, but you know, but that's what I'm saying. I think that's the difference he's saying. Yeah. We're rubbing shoulders with them as opposed to just coming in and saying, all right, you wear the label atheist, therefore you're the enemy, and we're going to argue you to Jesus. And I'm pretty sure not a single atheist said, I finally get it.
Yeah.
From any of those arguments.
Compelling.
Yes.
People logic.
It's actually really embarrassing to watch that happen. It really is. It's not how Jesus deals with people, first of all. And second of all, like any attempt to have some kind of, I don't know, intellectual battle, like you just end up losing, right? I've never seen a Christian win one, to be honest with you. I just haven't.
I've seen the whole walk up with a pamphlet that isn't for the other person, it's for you. And it's got, if they say this, then say this. And then if they say this, then say this. If they bring up the old earth,
isn't that like a call center?
On this, throw them this scripture if they discredit God. Whatever. That's the transactional that you're bringing into to trying to bring Jesus into a number.
And I think that's what Matthew was getting at when he said, take up your cross and follow this flow chart. I think that was kind of exactly of what he was after.
He said, make sure that you figure out all the Excel spreadsheets that you need to do and make sure you've got the proper formulas in there to figure out, just input a question, then it immediately spits out a Bible verse.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to a little bit of stuff that we talked about last week when addressing the first four of these questions. It doesn't mean that you have to let your brains go. Because God gave you the brains, and like it's not that there's not
intelligent, logical conversations that can be had. But like, ultimately, those things are only are conversation starters. They're not conversation finishers.
Right.
Right. They are not the end. Like, if you win and they lose and they don't still love Jesus, you both, you still lost. Right. That guy's still lost. And what do you, you beat upon a lost guy. Congratulations. So, yeah. Yeah. I think it reminds us to say, Jesus is the king and the conqueror. We are not, shoot, Paul's got me. We are more than conquerors. But like, it's a different context. Different context. It is not our job, to go through defeating people and then like enslaving them into the kingdom. It's a voluntary slavery. They're submitting to Christ on their own. We're simply passing around like the king is here and he's conquered. You really should get on board.
Hey man, that's our next bumper sticker. Volunteer slave. That's happening.
Boo's not in the bumper.
I get a list of like 15 bumper stickers that ain't happening.
Yeah.
That needs to happen.
That's going to be a bumper sticker. That's going to be a bumper sticker.
God don't bless no mess.
God don't bless no mess. I would like to close with a different sort of lie. This is not a way that I lie, but instead a way that I was lied to. I was lied to by religious people. They told me that cross-spiritual communication is dangerous. It is dangerous because when I do it, there's a strong possibility that we'll divide and the other person will become my enemy. I feel like the Witch of Endor was in on this thing. Or cross-spiritual meaning difference faith.
Yeah.
Not across spirits.
Right.
Yeah. I would have said that differently.
Yeah.
I said that Witch of Endor, I feel like God is some, I mean, there's some trouble in that thing. Well, in my experience sharing my faith around the world and in my post-Christian society, what is post-Christian? What is that?
I have no idea.
We're no longer a Christian society.
You doofus.
That's Dan and his friends that say stuff like that.
Post-Christian city.
Yeah.
We were Christian long before, and then we moved in. If we can share honestly, authentically, and with humility, division does not happen. Instead, friendship happens. Hyperlink. Oh crap! I wonder what friendship is. We're left. I'll look it up later.
Okay.
I didn't check that beforehand. Agreed.
I don't know. You had some weird reactions in there that kind of threw me off.
Yeah, go back to the essence.
That's not the way that I lie, but instead a way that I was lied to. I was lied to by religious people. They told me that cross-spiritual communication is dangerous. It is dangerous because when I do it, there is a strong possibility that we'll divide and the other person will become my enemy. Is that a lie people tell?
Don't talk to other people about Jesus so that you don't get divided in your faith? Is that
cross? I think it's like don't hang out with like Muslims and Buddhists.
Because
you might become one or.
Well, no, in the beginning of his article, he talks about his concept of cross spiritual communication. I thought that's what he calls evangelism.
Did you read this outside?
Yeah.
That's impressive, Booba. Congratulations.
I don't understand all these big words that you're using. I feel like he's saying don't talk to people of other faiths.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So if I remember correctly, he talks about he calls evangelism or speaking to other faiths cross-spiritual communication.
And you say that people lied to him about that.
No, here we go. I've been asked to speak on evangelism, or as I prefer to call it, cross-spiritual communication.
Why would you prefer to call it that? No one knows what that means.
He's bald and has a neatly trimmed beard. I feel like you could have figured that out.
Why would you call it cross-spiritual communication?
Yeah, because evangelism big bucks to go to conferences to explain that, though.
Sometimes I call it talking to another guy.
Exactly. It's called, hey, Steve. That's it.
I like this guy. I think he's nailed it. That cross-spiritual communication is kind of a bummer. All right. Anyway, seven lies Christians tell. Go to ChristianityToday.com, and you're looking for a, late February web-only article of a Facebook man with a serpent's tongue sticking out. And otherwise, a pretty decent article to discuss. And I think the truth is what this should cause us to do is make sure. This doesn't change anything about the Bible, but it does change how we've taken it in, like what we may have read or saw other people do and misunderstood, and then kept applying or felt like we had to overstate. I think the broad thing, and this culminates both last Monday and tonight. Which is we try to protect God as if he needs protecting. And so we make our cases seem stronger than they are. We say we don't get exposed to a Jewish guy because I might revert to Pharisaicism. Like all these things as if God needs protected. And it's simply not the case. So don't overstate what you know. Don't overstate what you believe. Just like deal honestly with Jesus for starters, and then with other people and meet them there. Cause like you're a person too. God's not asking you to be God. As a matter of fact, I was preparing where the sermon that's coming up this week is on the Lord's Prayer. And like when he says, hallowed be your name, like that's a command form. It's basically saying, God, be God. And like, that's I'm nervous about that, but I like it. Like, dear God, be God, which means that if he's God, then you're not. And you, there's no reason for you to have to do that and pretend like you are. And I think it eliminates kind of a lot of what these go to, which is over-posturing, as if we have to protect Jesus or God from something that obviously he created and can't destroy him. Hmm. All right. Anyway, Mike, what's Pope style? Oh, hold on. Quick shout out to Pope style. Here's how it works. Someone has mistaken Mike for the Pope. Scandalous rumors. They saw him, help a homeless guy, and they thought, it's Francis. He's out and about. And so they said, Mike's the Pope. We're going to follow him back to his house. There's tens of thousands of people if it was my lawn. It's probably 800 or so if it's Mike's. They're hanging out on the lawn, and they think he's the Pope, and they won't leave until he comes out and gives some bit of wisdom that is applicable to his life and theirs, just like a Pope would. And so, Mike, knock, knock, knock. The people wait. What is your Pope-style advice?
So I was hanging out with the ladies tonight reading some we started reading the book of Acts, and we read about the ascension and how Jesus was heading up to heaven, and how the disciples were sitting there, and the awkward, what I perceive as the awkward raise as Jesus rises, still continues to stare at them, and the disciples are just staring right back for a while.
Yeah.
And anyway, I asked the ladies, I said, so what do you think, what do you think goes on up in heaven, you know? And I got a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and they were throwing out different ideas. You know, the 4-year-old says, it's all white. It's all that happens. It's white. That's what happens. And the older one's like, I wonder if we can play some games up there. I said, I feel like Jesus throw down on some games. I mean, he probably knows all kinds of cool names, you know? And the youngest one looks at me and goes, do you think we can play hide and seek with Jesus? And I thought, that's got to be the worst sounding idea ever. Right?
I know where you're going.
And I thought, and I didn't say that out loud, you know, and I said, I'm sure Jesus has got all kinds of good ideas, you know, on what games we can play. But I was driving in here today and for some reason that popped back in my head and I thought, judging by his character and judging my character, this is exactly how it would go, right? Jesus is it. He goes 7, 8, 9, 10. Mike's behind the fern. Crap. I say, all right, it's my turn. And then I go 8, 9, 10. And I turn around and look, there's Jesus standing right in front of me. He says, I've been here the whole time. I thought, you know what? Playing hide and seek with Jesus is not fun. So basically what my Pope style advice is, not to characterize the Lord in a completely humorous way, but like playing hide and seek with the Lord is a complete waste of your time and completely not funny. And you're attempting to hide from him is going to do nothing but hurt yourself. And basically he knows where you're at. You're not getting away with anything, right? And when it comes time to find him, that is exactly where he's standing, is right in front of you saying, hey, I don't know where you've been, but I've been standing here. let's talk. And so, like, if I was going to drop you some Pope style advice, it would basically be like, some people like to shove, and when I say some people, I mean me, like to shove their primary responsibility with keeping their relationship with Christ kind of to the background. I've known my grandpa a long time, and I don't talk to him as much as I used to. I don't see him as much as I used to because we grew up and had some things going. And I still feel like I know him and everything's cool. But the truth of the matter is I don't know him like I used to know him. And I don't know what's going on in his life. And I don't get to talk to him near as often. And that's on me. And some of that boils down to the same truth that is with me and Jesus. Like I know a lot about him. I talk about him a lot. But I don't know him like I used to know him. Frankly, because I'm just not talking to him. I'm not seeking him. I'm not seeing what he's doing. I'm not asking him what's going on. And don't let that happen. Don't let that happen to you. I don't know. You'll notice the difference. And it's really something that you, I don't know. I think most people, me included once again, think it's hard to get back. And really, I think the truth of the matter is just finish counting to 10 and open your eyes. And that's my Pope style advice.
Buva?
I was thinking the whole, 1, 2, behind the rock, 3, 4, you're in the tree, 5, 6, are you kidding me?
3, 4, nice spot, Zacchaeus. 2,000 years, real funny.
doing that sycamore, huh?
Actually, I just thought of Jesus going 1, 2, I'm the guy that the lost are found, right? That's me.
Came to seek and save the lost. There you are. I found myself here before when it comes to the whole playing hide and seek with Jesus thing. Because, I've had a relationship with God. I think that's, growing stronger for the last couple of years. But I find myself every once in a while slipping back into that whole, maybe Jesus doesn't really see me kind of deal. Maybe he just doesn't know where I'm at and all this different stuff. And then I kind of find myself thinking, what puny God do I think I believe in that I wholeheartedly believe is the size of this entire universe and holds it in his hand? And then he goes, well, where did Troy go? Like, I can't find him. I don't know where he's been kind of deal. And then I kind of have to take this step back of, you know, there's not really this way that I can hide this from God. There's not really, you know, whether it's sin or whether it's I feel like I am separated from God or I'm separating myself from God, whatever that is, it's a humbling feeling. Just take a step back and realize, you know, don't think that you even have the ability to do that, to hide from God, to hide what you're doing from God. He's God. He's the one that you believe in that is enormous, and he knows everything. You know, he knew everything you would ever do before you were born. Thousands of years before you came into existence, he knew exactly who you were and every decision you were ever going to make. Who do you think you are that you can hide something from him? And I have to take that kind of, it happens a little less often nowadays, but it's I have to take that step back of, you know, why am I trying to hide that from him if I know that he's all-powerful and I know that he understands all, that he loves me unconditionally, and that there's no reason to even hide anything from him or hide myself from him.
Probably the same reason that when you're a kid and you think there's a monster or a robber in the house, if you just put your head under the blankets, they won't see you. I mean,
yeah,
no,
I mean,
that's
obviously true. They can see you.
Yeah.
You know,
what's that lump over there?
No, you can't see me. I'm under the blankets.
My kids, every time I go to pick them up from their grandma's house, they're hiding behind the curtain. Every time. Big old bulge on the outside of the curtain moving around because they waited too long to get there when my car pulled up. And, like, it's same spot, and they can't figure it out. Yeah. They're like, I know where you're at.
And we do the same thing with God. Oh, you can't see me. Yeah, I can.
Hiding behind the curtain from Jesus with his car in the driveway.
It especially doesn't work with me.
That's fair.
Let's curtain stick out.
Yeah. All right. Everybody get off the lawn. Don't play hide and seek with Jesus.
Not fun.
All right.
Sounds fun. Not fun.
All right, Buva, you had some Pope style?
Yeah, everyone left Mike's lawn.
We need a new pope, they say.
They came over. They were just like, hey, man, you know, that hide and seek with Jesus sounds fun, and we want to do that, and that guy's telling us not to. Francis,
no.
We're walking away. So they've come to my lawn now, and surprisingly, there's 5,000 more. But here's my pope style. Stop being a schmuck. That's part A. Part B is, you know, be a man of your word. Something happened recently in my life. And I won't give specifics of it too much, but someone said they were going to do something, and it didn't happen. And at first, I kind of took anger to that, and it kind of hit me, and I had this anger towards that person and what was going on, and it made me upset, and I felt like calling them out, and you know, I had a fire in me. And then it really kind of hit me that God kind of flipped it. And it turned into, instead of having this anger towards this person and this being upset at them, and, you know, even if you have the best intentions of being upset and calling them out from the perspective you want them to get better, maybe you should examine yourself. And when we're called to be men of our word, and we're called to just let our yes be yes and our no be no, that's not just the big stuff. That's not just big decisions that you think are going to affect someone. Just because you can't think of a negative repercussion for you doing something or not doing something doesn't mean that you can't not give your word on it. So if you said you're going to do something, and then even if it's just inconsequential and it's not going to hurt anyone if you don't do it, it doesn't matter the scale of what's happening. You said you were going to do something and you didn't, and you're not going to. There is no scale of, oh, this is important and it's not important. It's your word either way. If I said to my godson that I'm going to go buy him a rubber ducky and he doesn't even remember it from last week, or if I said to somebody that I was going to help him move and I never showed up, it's the same situation. I said I was going to do something. One was of consequence and one wasn't, but it doesn't matter. It comes down to the fact that you know, you're called to have that truth in your words. You're called to have that honest communication with people. If you say that you're going to do something, you're representing your character and you're putting your respect on the line of who you are and the man that you can be or the woman you can be. It's not up to you to decide whether or not it was important. After you said you're going to do it, do it. If you can't commit to it, don't say you're going to. And I find myself falling into that every once in a while because the fact that in bigger stuff. Oh, so years ago, I was awful at this. I was very bad at saying one thing and then doing the exact opposite. Saying I was going to be somewhere and then not doing it. Saying I was going to do something and then not doing it. And I've, you know, through the grace of God, have been getting a little bit better at that, just trying to help myself or fix myself. And God's been working through me. But I still find myself in those little things. And those, yeah, no problem. I'll have that to you by tomorrow. And then tomorrow rolls around and I didn't even start it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, oh, you know, it's not going to hurt anybody if I didn't do it. It's whatever. No, it comes down to whether I told somebody I was going to move them or whether I told somebody I was going to send them an email. I said I was going to do something. I need to do it. That person's, my reputation with that person is on the line, but that's not the most important thing. I represent myself as a man of God, and I say that statement. I'm putting that there. I'm putting my character as a Christ follower on the line, and I'm meant to do these things. And if I don't, how negative a reaction could that person have, especially if they're a non-believer? I said I'm going to do something, and then I don't. They're going to think to themselves in some situations, well, that guy loves Jesus and didn't even do that. You know, that's not even a big deal. It obviously doesn't matter to him. You know, what other kind of stuff doesn't matter to him? And obviously, I understand that that's the extreme of that situation, but it still stands. No matter what you're saying that you're going to do, it does not matter if it's of consequence to you or not. You said you're going to do something. You bet your butt you're going to do it. Get out there. Get it done. It's your word. Do it.
And I think that's that's the big point, right? It's like sometimes we mistake integrity as being basically aware of your consequences and acting in the right thing, even if the consequences are bad, and doing the right thing. We call that integrity. But integrity really is doing the same thing regardless of the consequences.
Right.
Like being, if you said that you're going to do it, regardless of whether somebody, I had this example, this has been like a couple years ago, but there was a guy at church who like sent me, like a pamphlet or something to review. And I'm like, I'll get to that, I'll have it back to you tomorrow. It's because we need to print it for the next week. I looked at it, but I didn't provide any comments. And I didn't send it back to him. And I didn't realize that I'd forgotten about it till like a week later. And I went back to the guy and I said, hey man, I totally forgot about this. I'm real sorry. Here's your edits and stuff. I apologize for the delay. And here's the guy was totally cool about it. He's like, I understand you're busy, young family, blah, blah, blah. And he's right. All those things are true. But I didn't tell him, I'll try to get it to you tomorrow. I got a lot of stuff going on, but most definitely by next week. I said, I'll get it to you by tomorrow. I didn't reach out to him Wednesday and say, hey man, I said I'd get it to you by Sunday, or I didn't call him Sunday and say, hey, I'm not going to be able to do this today. How does Tuesday work? If I can get it to you by then, does that work out? I'm sorry. Right. What I did is I waited a week until I ran into the guy again and then said, hi, I didn't keep my word. Here's this thing. And it's irrelevant that he was cool about it. It's irrelevant. I'm glad he's gracious and forgiving and that people are in there. But I lacked complete integrity there. I said I was going to do something and I simply didn't do it. And it's like, oh, well, you forgot. I didn't do anything to make sure I remembered.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like my integrity doesn't stop at my capability to like put things in place. It's like, hey, I said I would show up and do this thing. Oh, I overslept. Well, integrity says I set my alarm. My integrity says if I tend to sleep through alarms, I set two alarms or I call somebody. Like those are things within my control to maintain integrity of when my yes is a yes and my no is a no. And we usually cut it off at the first pass. Well, we overslept. It happens. Well, yeah, it does. I didn't plan for that. It didn't mean enough for me to inconvenience myself to plan twice and to have you call me or whatever it was, right? And so That's the hardest thing is the diminished level of what integrity means in our and how we look at it, what our culture is. And you're right, it's as simple as that. Your yes is a yes, your no is a no. If I said I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Right.
And I don't live like that. I don't live like that. My life is very much catered on half promises.
Same here.
Well intentioned, good natured, false half promises, and that stinks. And I hate it.
Yeah, because you want to be helpful.
Yeah.
You want to be the good guy, and then you overcommit.
Yep.
Yep. I know it.
It's not integrity.
Right.
It's not integrity, boys. I agree, Booba.
Let your yes be yes, your no be no. Get off my lawn.
I don't like either one of our popes.
Yeah, shoot. Indicting. All right. You're listening live from the Path. Hey, before we get going any further, a big thanks to our sponsors. Bob Eisen with the Eisenhower team, continuing to bask in the glow of being the top realtor here in the metro area, as voted by City View readers. And that's not his first go-around at this joint. He's won this thing before. And despite his relationship with Live from the Path, he continues to dominate. That speaks very highly of Bob, very lowly of us. But anyway, go to the EisenhowerTeam.com, and get a hold of Bob for all your buying and selling needs. If you're looking to buy a house, sell a house, want to know if it's even worth it to do either one, Bob's your man. Go ahead and get a hold of him. That's who I use for my real estate transactions. It's not like I'm doing 50. I've attempted to.
I've got three this week.
But he's a great friend of the show, and he's the right guy to reach out to if you're looking. Also, the Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. You can set up your appointments online. Spring is a coming. The animals are going to want to get out and about and chase some stuff. And if they're limping around or if they need to flee and tick, now's the time to start thinking of that stuff. Make sure you're prepared for that season. My dogs are rabbit killers, man. They're awful. And they drag those poor beasts up, lifeless, trying to drag them in a house. And they look at me, and you can see the fleas on their face where they've gotten a hold of a flea-ridden rabbit. Yeah. And then I have to look at them, and they don't understand, right? They think they've done right, and really they've done wrong. And I keep them outside, and they take it very poorly. And some of that's my lack of preparation. I should have got them with the poison first.
I think I got a cat heading into the avenue to the Westfield tomorrow, in fact. Remember that one-eyed cat I was telling you about?
Yeah.
The lady brings this cat up to me and says, hey, sniff that eye. And I took a whiff of it, and it smelled bad. That means infection has set in. And so they're going to take it and, I don't know, de-infect
Shoot,
it.
Shoot, is that what it means?
I don't know.
I think my armpit's infected.
That's gross.
Yeah.
Bummer.
I said, don't ever ask me to smell a non-eye from a cat again. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Did you think it was going to turn out well?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought maybe it was just an opinion question, but I think she already knew the answer. So...
Maybe you can take your cat, and I can take my dog over to Ben's house, and his dog's going to take care of him.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Put some ears on it.
Anyway, I'll let you know how that turns out. Okay. I'm fairly certain they're going to straighten it up.
All right, go to westfieldvethospital.com, and whatever. They handle more than they're vets, and we're not.
Shiny
so whatever reasonable questions you have for a vet, they're the place to take that kind of thing, too. Please don't call or email us. That's a terrible life choice. All right, hey, so Buva.
Question from a new believer.
All right,
New or non?
New.
New, okay, got
it. Yeah, so it switched from new to non to new.
Is this a spanking new? Okay, I'm ready.
Spanking new believer. Was asked a question that I've been asked multiple times myself and that I've also asked as I consider myself a new believer, and I probably always will. But question of when reading the Old Testament in comparison to the New Testament, there's a lot of laws in the Old Testament, obviously. There's a lot of commands that are in there for this is how you handle this situation, this is how you handle this situation, you know, don't do this, do this, don't do this, do this. How is it that we are to discern things that no longer need to be done, such as the eating certain food,
yep.
Whether it's doing certain sacrifices, whether it's speaking to priests about blemishes, all the good stuff. How is it that we are supposed to determine what is still needing to be done and then what can be not necessarily thrown away, but can be considered to have been covered by God and covered by Jesus' sacrifice? How do you determine that? How can you read through that to figure out what is relevant and what is history?
Well, to be honest with you, I feel like the New Testament covers a lot of that. Right, like Paul's discussion on how we're to understand the law, and the things that Jesus has reinforced. Like if Jesus is, if you're on the Sermon on the Mount, he's calling you to this greater righteousness, and he's explaining to you what those things are.
Mm-hmm.
He would seem to be pointing to the things that he cares about, and they're not inconsistent. They're greater than before. And so I would say that it is within the context of understanding the life of Christ, and the impact on that on. Someone on trying to understand who God is and what he wants. I think that's where a lot of that comes from. Like a lot of stuff we fight with, we would continue to fight with because we're acting like Paul didn't write anything or that Jesus didn't do anything about it, right? Like things change and it's all right that things change. He's God. He can do what he wants to do. So like from a distinct basis, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people have talked through these types of things, understanding cultural and ceremonial laws, things that God had them do that was part of a temple or tabernacle type of thing, and we don't have, right? So those are gone. Some were ways to stand out and have his people be distinct from the culture that surrounds it. It's the distinction between circumcision and baptism, or circumcision physically and circumcision of the heart, right? It's mm-hmm. the same concept. He's just, one is a physical representation, and one is happening, within the inner man type of thing. So the truth is that, like, if you're looking for a specific thing that says, by the way, here's all these X hundred of laws, this one check, this one no check, this one check, this one no check. It, you're not going to find that because mm-hmm. Jesus doesn't present himself to come through and say yes, no, yes, no. He says, yes, all of that, that's part of my story. Here's how I want you to see that going forward. So, I mean, the truth is if you're looking for that, and to be honest with you, I did. I wanted that. I wanted some way to look and say, here's everything that you said. Now I want you to bring it up, Paul, in your letter. The Corinthians could always use another one and then say, here's this thing. Here's what this means to you tangibly today. Here's this thing. Here's what it means to you tangibly today. I think that based upon what Jesus has said and done and how the apostles took that, I feel like that's a conversation that he doesn't want us to be having, right? And that's not to dismiss the legitimate question that underlies that, because I think it's reasonable to say, here's what you said. If things have changed, how do I know specifically? But it is more, I think, directed and implied by the things that Jesus has taught than it is like a side-by-side document where you could go through and actually like start checking that stuff off. Paul does address some. Jesus does address some.
Right.
He doesn't do the thing holistically because it's meant to speak for the all.
Right.
Yeah. If you think, for example, like before let's say I'm leaving my kids by themselves for the first time, and I say, before I walk out, I say, hey, look, I want you to act like you're me and don't do something that I wouldn't do. That covers a lot more ground than don't break the lamp, don't try to put a DVD inside the VCR, don't make hot cocoa on the stove. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Me listing off 1,000 things, Jesus goes right for the intent and says, this is what your heart needs to look like. And this is what your heart should be if you want to be in my kingdom, and you're working towards this. He doesn't have to use as many words.
And I suppose there is a distinction between communication and example, right? So, like, God is specifying these things as a way for them for definition of their community, but also that they might know what God wants because they cannot interact with God, right? Like, he's not walking among them for them to see how he is, how he reacts and that type of things. Jesus, on the other hand, has provided, in lieu of writing everything, all those types of things down, his life serves as that example, and then that then informs how we understand everything else going forward. And so it's actually, and it's interesting when you think of it in that way, because what does John call Jesus at the opening of John 1? He's the Word, right? Jesus is the way God is communicating with us on what it looks like to live in his kingdom, how to live, things to do. Whereas prior to that point, you know, what God has desired, how we're to live, has been communicated through his rules of community contained in some of those Old Testament laws. And so that is Jesus is the greater righteousness over those things. It is his life that is able to serve that example. And that logically makes sense. But it leaves sometimes a desire to say, I want to be sure, right? Because it's not a different God. And it's true that it's not. It's the same God. He's communicated in a different way, a clearer way, and a way that is impacted by who Jesus was and how he lived and how he died.
I always tell people that the Old Testament really shows us the character of God. And to relax, I mean, if you're a new believer, it's going to take you a while to get this book. You know, you're not going to be a great theologian that understands everything in the first year. You know, in 2 years, you're going to know more than you do now. And in 5 years, you'll know more. It's just one of those things that just keeps growing with you. So focus on the New Testament. Get that down. Read that through at least 2 or 3 times. Then go back and read the Old Testament. And then read the New Testament. And the New Testament will mean a lot more when you get the Old Testament. But you got to have an understanding of the New Testament first. Because you're a New Testament believer. That gives you all the Jesus stuff. And so you want to get both, but focus on the New Testament first, especially in your early days. That'll just confuse you. Be like, well, I don't have a lamb. I don't need it. Where's the temple? I mean, it's like, you don't need to worry about that anymore.
So instead of creating the checklist like you guys have been talking about, this is okay, this is okay, this is not, this is okay, this is okay. God has created a path for us to follow through Jesus' example and who he was and what he called out specifically, and then continuing on into the letters of the New Testament with Paul and all of those different people writing to others to explain what the heart of the issue is and what God expects you to be like, and therefore your actions will fall into suit. It's not necessarily something you need to check box off like the old law was. Now it's be the person that God wants you to be, and the actions will follow.
Yeah. Instead of I'll give you my list, God said, I'll give you me.
And then you act accordingly.
So that you may know, right? And that has created great freedom in our lives. But you have a very a very clear picture of who Jesus is, and it's a very clear teaching from Jesus. And so where the laws have kind of dove into some of the minutia, Jesus took his life demonstrated and his words demonstrated a higher plane that then is to cascade out down and everything, so that we don't have to, if the law didn't answer it, we don't have to question what the right reaction is, right? Like, we have Jesus as an example. We have a parameter, a guidelines in which we can think through things that otherwise aren't explicitly written, which, to be honest with you, is a big deal we run into, is Christians haggling over things that aren't explicit. And it's because we fail to run them back through who Jesus was, and how he acted and what he fought for. And if we go back through that lens, it resolves a lot of those issues. But really, what we're more fighting for the tit for tat thing, like we want to be able to gain our ground or whatever, and so we lose it. We lose that, and we end up fighting over stupid things as if we weren't provided an answer through the life and teaching of Christ.
All right.
Okay. All right. Anyway, wait, was that it? That's the question for you?
Yeah, that was the full question from the new believer.
I think that's a pretty reasonable question. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, that's where a lot of people struggle, when it creates doubts in their mind because they don't understand it. Mm-hmm. Right, like they started with, you told me this this roses business about Christ on the cross, save me, blah blah blah. You right? Okay, I believe that. But once if you're saying that to accept that, I have to accept all this, it brings in the entire spectrum of the Bible as a playing field to say, can I believe this or not? And like that's the hiccup right there. Is reasonably like, I don't understand this. How can I believe that? And if it's one's contingent upon the other, if everything's a 10, and we said these things were a 10. Then it's completely reasonable grounds to say, how do I get it? How do I understand that? I think it's a reasonable question. All right, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. By the way, if you caught the show from last week, just a reminder, you can go to SoundCloud.com, look for the Israelites. There are albums out there if you had a chance to listen to it and enjoy that and give them a little love and support. Also, some friends of the show, Silverside. So Silverside's going to be back in the studio. What did we say, early May, Mike?
Yeah, I think first Monday in May.
Okay, so first Monday in May, we're going to be able to talk to Silverside. Always excited for those guys to come by in the studio. They're a ton of fun to have in. Always have some interesting things going on that we like to catch up with. But their album is out, Casting Shadows, and it's available. You can go pick that thing up. Make sure you support them. The music is awesome, and they're out there. It's not an easy life. Trying to play in the venues that they want to play at, right? Like, their music is to reach people who need to hear the what Jesus has for them, and you have to go into some very interesting places sometimes to get that message out to them. And so those guys are working hard. They're fighting for the kingdom through their music, and definitely go out and support them, and make sure you set some time aside for that first Monday in May so we can check those out. Also, JC's going to be in the studio. JC is a country artist. She's originally from the area. Spent a lot of time in other parts of the country, Nashville and places like that, recording and living that life. And so she's going to be in town. She's going to be in the studio here in the 23rd. She's going to play a little for us, tell us about how her life's going. That's going to be cool. Wagner's band's going to be in at the beginning of April, right, Mike?
Maybe so.
That's a tenuous. It's
I'm
possible.
Waiting for a confirmation.
Okay, so Wagner was on a couple weeks ago. If you remember him, it's John Wagner. He was we had our Lent discussion.
Yeah.
John was helping us out with that. Also, it looks like we're going to be able to get Chris Akers and Wayne Stewart in later towards the end of April coming in. And those guys have been fantastic. Yeah. Always great. Solid. The solid musicians always got. They just have very interesting songwriters, and so I'm excited to come in, have them come in and see what's going on in their lives, and so we can catch up with what they're going on. So lots of good music stuff coming up, in studio performances on Life from the Path. So clear your calendar, boys.
Yeah,
there's good stuff going on. So if you are hanging out, and I mean hanging out on the Truth Network 99.3, we've got to let you go, and we should be seeing you the following Saturday. So clear some time off your calendar. Make sure you're driving in the car, sitting at home with your grandma, listening to the radio. And we'll catch you next week on 98.3. If you are listening on the podcast, we'll be gone for a matter of seconds and then be right back with you. Thanks for listening to Live from the Past. Got no teeth and he got no hair. He got no daughter and he got no son. He's just waiting till the rapture come. I said he waiting till the rapture come. We never did bury, and he never went far.
never bought a house or a big old car. Hello,
Jude. I should have chosen this song. I was trying to buy time because I didn't have my songs. I didn't have my songs lined up. The song's going to cost us a hit on the YouTube broadcast. They're going to flag it and say, you do not have the rights to this song.
Oh, man.
That's rough times. That's right. We can take a few of those. We can take
Are we back out of the red? We were close to the red.
Yeah. No. We haven't been threatened by YouTube for quite a while. So that's good news.
Hey, cool.
All right. Dear Life from the Path, I am a 48-year-old woman. Occasionally, I suffer from night sweats and have had a couple of hot flashes. My husband enjoys turning on the mattress heater in our bed. He has turned my side on by mistake a few times, which caused me to roast and have an uncomfortable night. Even when he heats only his side, it's too hot for me. I wake up sweating and see him lying naked with all his covers flipped onto me. What a disaster. I have suggested he cuddle with me if he's cold, but he insists on using the electric heater. I don't see any reason to waste the electricity, especially when it makes me uncomfortable. I'm thinking about separate beds. Please help. Overheated.
Maybe you need separate beds for a while until you get to go through the change. That's what she's talking about. If you can't.
Wait, was I not paying attention? Did she imply she's going through menopause?
48. She's 48.
Yeah.
She's got hot flashes.
Occasional hot flashes.
Hold on, now it's time for health advice from Dan about the change.
She needs some high vitamin B doses that helps out with the hot flashes. That's what my mom told me 20 years ago.
What? Why did she tell you that, Dan?
Why didn't your mother talk to you about that?
She told me things I never should have known.
Okay. Dan suggests either a vitamin B super plus or separate beds. Booba.
I think you can have a conversation with your husband about a possible different thing rather than not just cuddling with you, but maybe getting a different blanket, another blanket. Anything like that that's not going to make you, like, uncomfortably crazy.
I don't understand. This guy seems completely outrageous.
He's selfish.
Yeah. He's saying he's hot, he's cold, used a heated mattress, and then ends up, like,
naked,
buck wild naked, sweating next to her?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, learn some moderation, dude.
Yeah, the dude needs to understand that, like, first off, he's being weird. Second off, like, he's making his wife that he loves, hopefully, very insanely uncomfortable and needs to be more sympathetic to that
what
situation.
What if there's a fire? He's going to end up outside nude.
Yeah,
just
did ever tell you about the time I woke up naked?
You're gonna end up throwing it off anyway.
In college,
no,
with a bunch of high school boys in my room.
What?
It was weird. It was like a weekend thing, and they like come and do a Jesus stuff, you know. And then they all stay in people's rooms. And I woke up in the middle of the night. I'm like, my blanket, like this guy. I'm going like, what the heck is going on here? And I'm like, I don't know where my underwear is. And I'm like, there's guys all over the floor. I mean, I can't like get off and run to my. It was the most awkward. I can't even explain it.
I'm awkward right now. Just hearing this story.
But it was probably hot. It was probably had all those bodies in there. It just got hotter, I guess.
I'm glad this is on the podcast because this is uncomfortable.
Well, I wouldn't have said this on the real radio.
Yikes, man.
But it was really weird.
Yeah.
It was weird to me, and I was the guy. I knew it, you know? And I'm like, I hope none of them woke up and saw what was going on.
Tell this dude that he's weird. And
yeah.
Just use another blanket because you're going to end up throwing it off anyway.
I mean, here's the deal. People can sleep in separate beds. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
If you want, I mean, it makes it hard to interact at points.
Pray together and stuff.
It's not a huge deal. But, like, I think he should be able to compromise. Like, my wife and I have a similar issue where, like, our temperature differences are distinct. Like, I sleep on the edge of the bed so that I can hang feet off the edge.
Yeah.
But I'm not considering not sleeping in my bed. I'll work on it. I'll figure something out. So, yeah, I think they should try to work it out. She should definitely talk to him. Explain. Maybe he's a doofus. Explain, hey, I'm going through the pause, and I don't want to spend this time alone from you, but you're acting like a sweaty nude behemoth, and I don't want to deal with you in this way.
They could do the Leave It the Beaver thing and have two twin beds just right next to each other.
So she's not impacted by the heated mattress?
I guess he can do whatever he wants. And
hey, that heated mattress makes me uncomfortable. Yeah, I don't care. I'm turning it on. Excuse me.
That's pretty selfish.
When I strip bare,
so you can see all my wonder.
It's too hot though. I'm gonna take these covers off too though.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Here we go. Secular's advice is separate beds might be a good idea. That's a practical solution for some couples. But before making the investment, have a talk with your doctor about your hot flashes, if you haven't already, because they may be caused by hormonal changes in your body. And he or she may be able to recommend a medication that can help with them.
Yeah, the problem is all in the lady, and the dude needs to do nothing.
Hey, no, she's actually legitimately sounds like she's going through some lady things.
Yeah.
But Ben's right. Naked ape, and he can, whatever, turn off a mattress and put on a pair of jammies.
Yeah, seriously. That's not acceptable.
I mean, what if there's a car accident outside your house, you know, and you'd want to go help, except for, oh, I forgot, you're nude. You know, put some pants on, for heaven's sake.
I've got to put pants on. Give me a second.
You let this behavior go for another 2 years. He's going to be lying astride on a bear rug in the middle of his living room, sleeping out there.
As a man gets older, his care for whatever society thinks goes lower and lower and lower, and he is already at the point of doing whatever the heck he wants.
Yeah.
He's in a dangerous position. You need to rein him back in. Here we go.
That's not loving Christ like you, like loving your wife like Christ loved the church. No. Okay, go ahead.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, what do you think of people who show up at graveside services for family only? Recently, a friend passed away. She didn't want a funeral. The family announced there would be a service at the grave for family only, followed by a small reception for family and friends. Well, some of the friends showed up at the service anyway. One of them stated, but she was like a sister to me. Mm-hmm. I felt it was an intrusion. The family was gracious enough, and they didn't let these people know their presence wasn't welcomed. What do you think, Life from the Path?
I think if you want family only share the time with family.
Right.
Yeah, don't tell them.
If you make it public, that like, I might still do that. Like, depending on how close I was to them. Like, if you say the family is holding a service here, that's not enough detail for me, unless you say friends don't come.
And Ben, don't go.
Yeah.
What? Well,
and actually, it sounds like the family was gracious, and you went the jerk route.
Wait, is she the family?
No.
She was a friend at the service?
Family friend.
Well, she was there, too.
I see.
And there were other friends there.
She was going to be the only family friend allowed at the family only thing.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, we're talking someone's life and death here. You know, give them some grace.
Yeah.
It sounds like the family handled this with civility and greatness, and you were upset that they didn't take the low road.
Yeah. Wow.
Classic.
Another dear Life in the Path, when other people handle things the right way, is it okay if I handle it the wrong way? Love me.
Is it okay if I get angry at people for doing the right thing?
Can you just agree with me, at least on a public basis?
Yeah, quit being a boob. Like, I would generally assume that, like, that gives people a pass to not feel guilty about not coming to the gravesite who weren't all that close. Uh-huh. But I'm not sure, but listing it that way implies to me that it is intimate family only, and that if I was very close to them, that I wouldn't show up. If they didn't want it public, they wouldn't have printed it.
Yeah. I mean, if it was said in my presence, I assume the announcement's for me. Yeah. Hey, there's lunch at 5. Great. Oh, you mean not for everybody? Well, maybe you shouldn't have told everybody.
Some people will get lunch at 5.
Yeah. Others, not naming any names.
You know who you are. No, yeah. She's way overreacting.
And if you're that close of a friend, you know, I would ask, hey, I see this is for family only. Do you mind if I come?
Boy, that's awkward. Yeah, I think we do.
I would do that, though.
I think we do.
Yeah. You're not really first-string friend, you know?
Second cousin Jimmy isn't even allowed in. You're probably not
going
to
be here.
Never mind.
Why can't I go to the funeral?
I'll bring gifts.
Secular says, oh my, of course it was an intrusion. The person who was conducting the service should have spoken up and reminded the attendees that the internment was family only.
Nope.
So the family wouldn't be placed in an awkward position.
No.
That would have been the most uncomfortable thing on the planet. If you're not family present, realize
ridiculous.
That based off of the ad posted, you're not welcome.
I see some of you don't have stars on your tummy.
Let's have a moment of silence while all of you walk away. All right, now that it's just family here, we can continue with the service.
Is that a Sneetches reference?
All right, you got
stars upon those.
You got time for one more here?
All that wild screaming day, all the wild screaming beaches, fix it up, Chappie kept fixing up Sneetches in to get out again. Blah, blah, blah. I love that. It's high art. Go ahead, Mike.
Do you have any idea what's going on, Mike? Because I'm confused.
No chance.
Hey, everybody loves the Sneetches.
It feels like there was a service that was happening, and we were not family, so we weren't invited to that, that reference.
It's Dr. Seuss's family.
You can't teach a Sneetch. Go ahead, Mike.
They need to stop. Go ahead, Mike.
Dear Life from the Path.
I'm the best.
I'm a 12-year-old girl, and I like a boy named Chris, in parentheses.
Oh.
We go to a different schools now, and I don't know how to get in touch with him and tell him how I feel. At times for the past 2 years, we have been flirting on and off. We will be reunited again next year. I can't hold on much longer, and he's at school with his ex. What should I do? Alabama.
Oh, man.
Your mom's not going to give you rides to see Chris. I'll leave him alone.
You can hold out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's at school with his ex.
Surprise. At 12 years old, I'm surprised the two of you don't have Facebooks.
I can't believe this man has an ex-girlfriend at 12.
Actually, that doesn't speak very highly of him.
No.
Yeah.
He's been in a relationship and also out of a relationship by 12 years old. It's seventh grade.
His ex is like, they used to meet at the tires. Now they don't meet at the tires anymore. I don't know what happens at 12 years old.
She gave me her chocolate milk once. So I decided we were girlfriend-boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then one day, the next day, I asked for the chocolate milk again. She said no, and I said, then we're over. She said, that's my chocolate milk today, sir. I said, then you and I are no longer a thing.
Our hearts are continents away.
Yeah, when I was 12, I wanted to have relationships like her, but I also didn't want to. You know, I waited because I thought, what am I going to do? I mean, honestly, as a believer, it's like, why get involved in something that's leading nowhere? You know, it's just worthless.
That is a pretty mature thought for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, I was going to say, at 12 years old, I was still getting down the whole, wait a minute, I have a class in a different room?
Oh, no, that's what I really
Don't
thought.
Don't we just sit here for the next 8 hours, and then once we go to the next class, I just grab the next book?
I was in love with Kathy.
I have to go to a locker and find the next classroom?
I wanted to marry Kathy, but I figured that's a long time to date.
But your dad says, I date to marry, and I'm only 12.
That was my commitment.
Everyone else is racked with confusion and hormones. Dan sees life clear as a Visine commercial.
I can't help it.
I believe that. It's a unique part of Dan's personality.
That's the truth, Rick.
Little Susie, I know that you and I have feelings for each other, but I don't see this going a long way, and I don't think that it's actually necessary for us to date since we're probably not going to get married.
How bored were you through all those conversations they sat you through, like, your body's going through changes and you're going to feel certain things, and blah, 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 and you're emotional, and blah, 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 and Dan's like, yeah, I know. I see how this is going to roll.
I was always like, did they say yellowish discharge? If you stay away from all that stuff, that won't happen. I don't care. So I didn't listen.
Dan's like, I'm not going to get overly dramatic about 7th and 8th grade, and high school is not going to be that bad. I fully understand at this point in time that this is only 6 more years, and then I'm going to be out of school. And then I'll start my actual life. At that point in time, I'll start dating Susie. If you still smile at me when we're getting a sandwich together, then we'll talk about it then.
Dude, I don't know how you didn't go around being condescending. Dan, happy Valentine's Day. No, it isn't. Let me tell you why.
Let me explain to you why.
Let me tell you how foolish you're being.
Love is a farce at your age, sweetheart.
I'm being saved from all the hurt and crying, the garbage you're going through. I'm having a very happy life. Until I find my wife.
You poor thing.
Go smile and swoon at Leif Garrett. I'm going to go.
He's the devil's puppet, that Leif.
I'm Sean Cassidy. Read my Bible and put my love in the Lord Jesus Christ. Thanks, Dan. You're the best.
Shall we read 1 John?
No.
Dan is like the Christian stereotype from every high school movie.
I didn't carry a Bible.
You guys have a Bible study real quick?
I didn't have to carry a Bible because it was written on my soul.
I wrote Philemon on my arm.
You got a tattoo.
It was free.
You got detention, Dan. Boy, Skippy. Good, because I got Philemon on my arm.
And there's a lot of ne'er-do-wells in that classroom. I will go where there is darkness. Send me and teach. I love you, Dan.
House party. Can I bring my Bible?
We're one prayer away from a Bible study. God don't bless, no mess.
God don't bless, no mess.
All right. What's the advice, Mike?
We didn't even give any. Secular's going to chime in, though.
Okay.
Secular says, you have held on this long, so remember the school year is already more than half over. In the fall, you and Chris will be attending the same school again without your having to do anything. For now, be patient. Stay active and involved with school, and time will pass more quickly. Focus on activities you enjoy and your friendships. Don't waste your time worrying about the other girl. She and Chris are exes for a reason. If you and Chris are meant to be, the chances of that happening will be better when you're classmates.
Here's the deal. If you throw God and Jesus into that statement, you have the exact same thing that Dan said in seventh grade.
Uh-huh.
That's all you, like, it's the exact same thing. It's like, if you say, don't worry about it, God's got you, be patient, blah, blah, blah. Secular's advice is exactly what 7th grade Dan would say.
Yep, true. Yep. Hers is more of like a karma providence type of angle.
His is like, God's got a plan.
Yeah, yep.
Dan, we need to do a new thing that's advice from 7th grade Dan.
Hey, man, that sounds like fun. This week's advice from 7th grade Dan.
I'm having trouble with my boss at work. Pray for him.
7th grade Dan says, invest in a 401k now.
I wish I would have listened to him.
I'm 12 years old. I get $5 a week. I can definitely put about $250 away. No problems.
All right. Okay, you want to do one more? We got one more.
Yeah, yeah, we'll do one more.
All right. Here we go. Joe Kahn. dear Life from the Path, I missed Joe Kahn on the chat. Man, hold on. They keep trying to get me to download the app.
Don't download the app.
Dear Life from the Path, when my in-laws come for dinner, they ask what they can bring. I always say, nothing, but they bring dessert or a bottle of wine, and then take the uneaten dessert or uncorked bottles of wine home with them. What's the rule of etiquette when someone brings items to a party?
Hey, man, that seems completely legit.
Hey, yeah, someone cares? Brought something that doesn't belong to you and then took it back with them.
And you didn't even ask for it in the first place.
What the heck?
And their family, right? You said mom
and
dad?
I brought some potato salad. You didn't want me to, but I did just to be nice. I'm going to go ahead and take it home. How dare you take that potato salad?
Yeah. They didn't stick you with the leftovers. You don't have to negotiate some kind of weird, when do I get my pan back?
Hey, look, I'd be inviting people over to my house all the time if they had to leave whatever we didn't eat. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, I'll call a bunch of people come over.
By the way, we're having supper tomorrow. What are you bringing?
I know you're going to tell me I can't bring anything, but I'm going to go ahead and bring some stuff, and if it's okay with you, I'm going to take it home.
I mean, do you hate wine and dessert?
That's weird.
Hey, man, people are really caught up on these formalities here.
Did she say did they say uncorked bottles of wine? You expect them to leave the bottles of wine that weren't even used at the house?
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like they leave the... No, they take the uncorked bottles of wine. What's left over?
Well, of course.
Well, if it's
How many do they bring?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
that's true. How many bottles of wine do you bring?
I brought a case.
I brought six bottles.
This will cover your father.
You'll get four, the rest of us get two.
I'm taking my three boxes and going home. Yeah, this is stupid.
that was blatant.
This is the stupidest question I've ever heard.
This is a non-issue, and you're kind of a jerk.
Hey, what's 7th grade Dan say about this?
7th grade Dan would say, you should just appreciate the fact that your mom and dad bring stuff for you. You enjoy it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't... I'm tapped. I cannot sympathize with you at all.
Well,
yeah.
What is the etiquette on it? You're wrong. Yeah. Your in-laws are fine. Don't ask us any more questions.
Yeah, it's not a swap meet. You know what I'm saying? People owe you something just for walking in the door.
The question's etiquette. See, I fail on all etiquette. So I suppose the etiquette is if you bring something, you leave it. I don't know.
Why would that be the etiquette?
I don't know.
Take your crap.
It's a gift.
Yeah, but you're setting yourself up to get a gift. That means if I invite you over to my place, I'm basically saying, I'd like a gift Friday night at 7.
Or if let's say no one is drinking the wine, but maybe I want to keep it. So I just go there and pop it open, take a little sip, and be like, unbottled wine for me.
It looks like they're all open.
They've turned it into an actual gift that's going to be a surprise by saying, no, don't bring anything. I wonder what they'll bring this time.
Just don't bring any Fritos.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That also means that, like, I can't volunteer to buy wine for anybody unless I'm willing to give up the whole bottle. Like, why don't I just give them what everyone drinks? And if they drink it all, that's cool. If not, I'll take it back.
Hey, if they sold half bottles of wine, maybe I'd bring that over and then keep half for myself.
That doesn't seem like especially inside the family.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Maybe you should reach out and try and have an actual relationship with your in-laws rather than this transactional situation of hopefully they'll bring some goodies, and if they take it with them, I'm going
to
get angry.
So think about it this way. Like, let's say you reached out to this family member of yours. Like, what could they possibly say that doesn't make you look like a jerk? Hey, why do you keep bringing desserts even though I said you didn't have to, and then take it home with you?
Yeah.
Well, I thought I really do want to bring something, so I do. And I didn't want to leave you with the leftovers, or nobody was eating it, so we thought we'd take it home with us. Like, how are you going to say something that doesn't make you look like a selfish jerk?
You can't, because you're a selfish jerk.
I brought that Oreo fluff because I think it's delicious, and therefore there was a bunch left over, so I took it home to enjoy it more.
Here's actually the opposite happens to me all the time. Every time we're invited over to somebody's house, they have leftovers, and they say, take some with you.
Yeah.
We have leftovers. Take some. as our guest, take some stuff back with you.
Yeah. Huh. Please take items of the festivities to your house.
The chat says, the bumper sticker idea, number four for the night, Dan fails at etiquette. A shocker to the whole community. here's what Secular says. Secular says, when guests bring something to their hostess, a bottle of wine or dessert, it is considered a gift. For guests to commandeer the leftovers without them having been offered is poor manners.
Commandeer the leftovers?
Here's the deal. What I've determined from Secular's advice is that we can never throw dinner parties. No. Because we are always off on dinner stuff. No matter what the dinner etiquette is, we are always wrong.
Let it be known, I did say the etiquette would be to leave it.
Your etiquette is... But you said you also failed.
I didn't say
etiquette.
I live by it. I'm stupid.
I just said I acknowledge that this is the right thing to do, and I say no.
Yeah, no, we could never throw a Live from the Path dinner party and then go back to all the episodes and find all of our dear Live from the Path.
We'd be kicking people out.
Hey, man, if you want to eat free for a week, we'll do one. And then we'll just keep all everything everybody brings.
We'll do a dear Live from the Path dinner party where we have to worry about, hey, can I use your oven for the sweet potatoes that I didn't prepare at my house? Is it okay? Oh, and by the way, you didn't ask for them, but I'm going to take them home. Is that all right?
Yeah, not a chance, butthead.
Get out of here.
You get out of here. My house, they're now mine. Man.
All right.
Never.
People are sad.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. Holy buckets. Okay.
This is when you need a woman in the studio to know this stuff.
I feel like I don't want to know this.
Right, this is not stuff that I want to have in my knowledge set.
Yeah, if I have to know that and act this way, I'm out.
Here's what we should do, though. We should contact, like, an etiquette teacher and see how much stuff we are wrong on when it comes to dinner etiquette, dinner party etiquette.
I got a better idea. We've run into enough of these. We're just going to publish our own book of etiquette. This seems like the right idea.
Etiquette from the Path.
Hey, we don't even have to change the spelling. Instead of Live from the Path, we'll say Live from the Path, and that will be our etiquette book.
Yeah. Yeah, we've already produced the cut. Yeah, this is a no-brainer. This will not make dime one, but it should be free to Duke.
Yeah, Live from the Path.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path.
Hey, we'll put it in pamphlet form. People can take it to conventions.
Ben, was that really the way we're going to end the show? You've been listening to Live from the Path.
I got some of the show in my throat. All right, thanks for hanging out on the podcast. Very much appreciated. Thanks to our sponsors, Westfield Veterinary Hospital, westfieldvethospital.com. Also, Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Nobody calls him Big Bob, but you probably can.
I call him Eisentower.
That's much better.
I think I'm the only one who finds that funny.
Hey, I can't remember. Were we on for this? Were we on for next Monday, or do we need to move the date on our buffet?
No, we got to move that.
All right, we're going to move the date. I'll let you know next week. Locked in. Integrity says Ben will have a date by next week. We're doing the big Life in the Path buffet. Thanks for listening to Life in the Path.